Bruce, great job this morning. Right along, so let's go ahead and there we go. Committee will come to order. Great job. Let's put it in gear and continue to knock these bills off of general file here. All right. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 229. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 229, introduced by Representative Summers. Game Animals Hunt Consultation Services, an act relating to outfitters and guides. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 229, Game Animals Hunt Consultation Services, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garou, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, and Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Clem, Acting Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 229 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And for the beginning of the explanation of the bill is the good representative from House 20, or House District 20, on the far side of the state.
All right. Thank you. Majority Whip Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members of the 64th, I apologize for my voice. I hope it'll hold out. I bring you House Bill 229 and ask for your favorable consideration. In western Wyoming, we now have hunt consultation services popping up on the Internet, which are selling trophy antlered game animal locations over the Internet. I have passed out the ad from one of these websites for you to look at. So if you go to that, your handout, you know, look in your box, look for House District 20 on, I think, the upper left-hand corner. Thank you. Upper left-hand corner, you'll see House Bill number 229, and this is actually the front cover to one of those websites. And in fact, the whole website is included in that handout. And so, what's basically, these consulting services are providing an outfitter service without having an outfitter's license. This bill would simply define these consulting services as a guide service. This bill does not prevent a hunter from recording a game animal location and using it for his own hunt or for a friend's hunt. Mr. Chairman, I will walk you through the bill. And, Mr. Chairman, when I get to the Standing Committee Amendment, I'll have the good chair of TRW go through the Standing Committee Amendment. But, Mr. Chairman, we go in on 23-2406, subsection A, into Romanet 3 guide services, and we create a Part B. And basically, guide services means for hire or remuneration, and A would be accompanying and providing assistance to a hunter in the field relating to the taking of any big game or trophy game animal except as provided. So in this case, they accompany and provide assistance to the hunter in the field. What these hunt consultation services are doing is they're actually going out in the field in the summer, and if you see these pictures in your in that handout, you'll see most of these bucks have horns that are still in velvet. And so they're finding the location of these bucks, these home ranges, and then they're recording those GPS locations of those bucks, and then they actually sell those locations over the Internet. So by putting in subsection B, we're trying to capture them. I kind of don't like the practice at all, but I think it's best if we try to capture them in terms of a guide service. So subsection B kind of goes and says providing hunt consultation services to a hunter. And then we go into Romanet 6, which is the definition for professional guide, and it means any person employed or by or operating under an independent contract with a licensed outfitter to furnish personal services for the conduct of outdoor recreational activities for the person of hunting animals or to provide hunt consultation services, except any person employed by a licensed outfitter solely to care for, groom, or saddle livestock, cook, cut wood, or to transport people, equipment, and personal property, And then we go into, we create a sub Romanet 9 Hunt Consultation Services, and you will see this is where you get into the Standing Committee Amendment. And when we originally did the bill, we kind of only contemplated the use of a universal coordinate system. So 9 says meaning to provide a hunter-specified geographic locations defined by a universal coordinate system for the purpose of locating any specific previously scouted big or trophy game animal. What was brought up in committee was, well, what about if they provide that on a map or some other means? You know, you could take that GPS location, you could download it on a map, and then you could provide the map. So with that, I would turn it back over to the good chair of TRW and let him go over the standing committee amendment and the change there.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm embarrassed to say I don't have the standing committee amendment up here. Does anybody have that? Thank you. So let me get my head back in the game here. I was all prepared to talk on and for the bill. Oh, okay. Now I'm back on track. So on page, let's see here, page 3, what we're really doing is we're adding not only the GPS information, but we're adding maps, drawings, illustrations, any of this kind of information to strengthen this bill so that it's not just confined to GPS locations, because essentially in this day and age of internet information and availability, it wouldn't be hard for somebody to figure out a loophole for this bill as it was written. So what we've tried to do is cover all those bases and be more specific in that. So if anybody, I would on and for the amendment.
Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment number 1. Question being called. We're voting on Standing Committee Amendment number 1, the House Bill 229. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. The amendment has been adopted. We're back in the bill. Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to speak on and for the bill. I'll just kind of go over some of the points that I have and that have come up in committee and from constituents and so forth. But this is a whole new thing. This is a whole new realm or genre that we've never really experienced before. And so let me just go down through this. These trophy mule deer bucks are highly sought after, and they have a real fidelity to their home range, okay? And so what they do is they typically go up to one of those high alpine bowls, and they stay there all summer long. And if you are an astute hunter, I guess you might say, and you have the time to do this, you can go up there and you can sort of figure out where they are, what their habits are, and figure out a strategy to hunt them. Okay, anybody can do that. Whether you hunt or not, you can do that. It's public land. But the difference, though, is now that this outfit here and others have made this information a commodity. You can buy that. In fact, if you read down through his information that was taken off the internet, it's for sale to the first person that comes along. And not only does this person sell you the GPS coordinates, they tell you where the nearest water is so you know where to camp. They tell you which trailhead to go to. Essentially, it's like, here it is, pay me the money, you're shopping for a trophy deer. It takes out the element of chance. It takes out a sporting chance for the deer. Because most hunters enjoy the serendipity of going out into the backcountry and just hunting. And hunting is the pursuit. It's the finding. It's the matching skills. It's all those things and being outdoors with your friends or family. It's not shopping for a mule deer at Walmart, or excuse me, at one of the chain stores. And so it violates the very ethic, the whole premise of fair chase hunting that we old deer in America, and especially in Wyoming, and it's, like I said, it's shopping. Now, let me just explain to you that when we were told about this problem, we went right to the Game and Fish, the department that manages the Game and Fish, and we asked them, did they know about it, and did they have any suggestions for a statute? Yes, they knew about it, and yes, they had a suggestion, put it in the Guide and Outfitter statutes in Title 23. Now, let me explain to you what that does. To get an outfitter license, you have to, first of all, take a test. You have to appear before the state board that regulates that industry, and you have to meet all their qualifications, which involves a camp inspection, $1 million liability insurance policy. You have to be able to, you have to pay the workman's comp, the unemployment, the sales tax, the lodging tax, all of those things that any other business has to pay. So you're a legitimate, credible business that helps the economy of the state. In addition to that outfitter's license, you then have to get simultaneously a permit from the land agency or the private landowner on which you operate. In this case, it would be the Forest Service, but the same is the case for the manager, or excuse me, the land management that whose initials are MLB backwards. So anyway, or a private landowner. So this is a highly regulated industry. The outfitting industry turns in harvest reports. They work with the Game of Fish carefully and thoroughly. And in the statutes, I think it's 23214, every licensed guide and outfitter has a statutory duty to report wildlife violations. Now, there are about, when you count the outfitters and the guides, there's about 2,000 licensed outfitters or guides. Okay, there's 350 outfitters and about 1,600 guides thereabouts. So if they observe a wildlife violation in the field, whether it's federal or state, they have a duty to report. So what does that mean? That means those are de facto game wardens that add to the 52 field wardens that the department has in the field. That's a presence. It's a deterrent. It's a tool for wildlife management. And so by putting this new business into the guide and outfitter statutes, they're going to have to, first of all, go to the Forest Service and get a film permit and an outfitting permit, and then they're going to have to go to the state and go through all of that criteria and all that expense and regulation, subject themselves to all these regulations so that the industry can be regulated. So anyway, from a regulatory, just an ethical point of view, I don't like what they're doing in this internet case where they're selling these deer locations. It's just not ethical. It goes against what all the hunters stand for in terms of fair chase, sporting chance, all those things. It's just unethical. So I would urge your support. Thank you.
Representative Crank.
Thank you, Chairman. On for the bill, locate in the area just be northeast of the state to the southwest of us. This is a big problem in our area. These guys, they come in and they don't just stop before hunting season, after. This stuff goes on basically year round. They come in, have these animals found, and then even after the season, it just starts all over right again. I mean, they start, just never quit. So on and for the bill, and look for your support on it. Thank you.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, on and for this bill. I actually didn't know this was happening out there, and I think it's very unethical. And mark my words, it won't be long before these guys will have technology to probably put a tracking device on these deer with a blow dart or some kind of gun, and then they'll be able to track these. They'll sell the coordinates or the tracking information, and they'll be able to track these deer right to where they're sitting, go up there and shoot them. So definitely in favor of this, making these guys pony up some of their time and money. And, on and for this bill, definitely.
Representative Biteman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, but I do have a question. Page 2, line 21, where it describes hunt consultation services, I don't see anywhere where it specifies that you're selling this information. And I have a question. Question pops in my mind: if I see a nice buck and I tell a buddy, "Hey, there's a nice buck up here," and give him my GPS coordinates, am I in violation of this statute, by just giving this information away? I don't see anything in there that specifies that you are selling the information. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm confused by this because this. It looks to me like this unethical conduct is being in a de facto way being sanctioned by us by licensing this unethical conduct. And there's nothing in here that says it's going to be outlawed or anything. It just says it's going to be licensed. And I'm just kind of wondering if this is the kind of bill you're really talking about, given the foundation material you've been talking about during the discussion.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So to the last question, I think we thought about that, and we kind of decided to just try to fence it in. We didn't know that if we could make it an illegal practice or not. I suppose we could, and maybe that is the direction you want to go. But for now, and to the other point on being able to sell, so one thing you have to look at is the definition for an outfitter, which is in this 23-2406, which is Romanet 4. Outfitter means a person, including a hunting club, who advertises or holds himself out to the public for hire for the purpose of financial gain in order to provide guide or packing services. So this guy's holding himself out, you know, to the public for a financial gain to provide guide, and so we're putting it in this guide service. And so that's kind of why we pushed it into there. As far as the question on whether it would impact an individual hunter, if you look in 23-2401 subsection B, and you look under what a resident guide is, a resident guide shall not guide more than two non-resident hunters in a calendar year, nor shall he accept any compensation or gratuity for his services. So it doesn't stop you as an individual from going out and using that or using it in a friend's hunt, as long as you don't sell the service. If you sold the service to your friend, then you would fall kind of with this under the outfitter's regulations. And we're just simply trying to fence this in. Maybe eventually we go down the road of completely making it completely illegal, but we at least want to fence it in for now.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just add very briefly that the hurdle to become a licensed outfitter and guide is quite expensive, and those costs are yearly. Those are fixed costs. So I would venture to guess, based on the rates that he lists on his website, that it'll probably effectively be a ban.
Further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Allen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so that House Bill 229 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 229 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Representative Guru, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor?
Yes, please.
Thank you. On March 15th, 1980, the state of Wyoming, the department that collects money, gave me a title that I hold to this day, sales tax collection agent. When I started my business, that's what they referred to me as. And as a member of the second largest industry in the state, a group that collects sales taxes, I wanted to, on their behalf, welcome a lot of those members of that industry that are here today and are having a party tonight at 6 o'clock at the hotel that we usually have receptions, and would like you to join them. So, members of the hospitality industry, stand and be recognized.
Welcome to the House. Chair, let's see. No other privileges. All right, the next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 1. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution 1, introduced by Representative Winters, Convention for Proposing Constitutional Amendments. A joint resolution requesting Congress to call a convention for proposing amendments to the United States Constitution as specified. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 1, Convention for Proposing Constitutional Amendments respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Whiteman, Kirkbride, Olson, Pownell, Winters. Noes, Representatives Baker, Jennings, Pelkey, and Salazar. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 1 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. We'll turn over the presentation to the good representative from the land of the good hot soak in House District 28, and he will also discuss the Standing Committee Amendment.
Very good. Representative Winters.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm honored to bring to you today a House Joint Resolution number 1, and I know that everyone in this room loves your Constitution, but we're here to talk about something very important because our republic, if we are to continue as a republic, depends upon this issue. And I've said something like this before, that I believe that our country is the most exceptional country in the history of humanity because our Constitution is the best political document that has ever been written, because it says something different than almost any people in any government has ever believed. And one man known as the father of the Constitution said it this way. He said it in the continent across the ocean. Charters of liberty have been granted by power, whereas we've set the example of charters of power being granted by liberty. And he said that in the past, most governments lived by the axiom that might makes right, that the king has all the power and the people are his dependent subjects. But our founders said, no, there are certain unalienable rights given by God amongst men, and government is simply a shared project to secure those rights. It is not the author or source of those rights. Therefore, I believe that when a federal judiciary or bureaucracy or an executive branch grows in power, it inevitably destroys rights that are inherent to the people. And the problem that we face today is that there has been a systematic dismantling of the intentions of the Constitution. Since the 1930s, we've watched the functions of our federal legislature fall to regulatory agencies that are increasingly unresponsive to the voter. It is the rise of an administrative state. And furthermore, in court case after court case, we've watched the powers of federal government push further and further into the jurisdiction that has been constitutionally reserved for states. We've seen alphabet soup agencies dictate to states what will and will not happen. And we cannot leave the future of our nation to hang on the whims of whoever happens to be in office. We need to fix the broken structures of our federal government so that it cannot overreach any longer. What we need is not a change in personnel, but rather a restoration of structure. And so when you look at what this bill does, it focuses not on who has power in Washington, but on how to take power away from that seat of federal government and give it back to the states and to the people. And the answer to that question is an answer as old as the Constitution. Article 5 gives to us a convention process that was one of our founders' very specific gift to the states, because he knew the nature of power, and he insisted that states must have a way to check federal power. And so, as I thought about this over this last year, I understood something, and I've said it over and over again. Greater political power either tries to absorb competing political powers into itself or to render them ineffective, and that has increasingly happened in the course of our republic. And that's where this bill comes in. House Joint Resolution number 1 calls for an Article 5 convention to propose amendments to accomplish 3 very specific objectives. First of all, to impose fiscal restraint on Washington. And we have heard individuals over the last couple weeks talk about the fiscal irresponsibility that has continuously crept into our system of government. But secondly, also, this bill, which this walks hand in hand, it is designed to limit federal power and jurisdiction. And I believe for those of us in Wyoming, this has to be a key issue, because we in this state believe strongly in federalism, in that government closest to the people is best. And then thirdly, this bill is designed to set term limits for federal officials and also to have a discussion regarding members of Congress, but it could be limited to federal judges. But I do believe that the conversation should happen. So if you would turn to page number 2 of your bill, you will notice in section 1, starting on line 15, from line 15 to 23, this is the uniform language that has already been passed in 8 other states and is being considered by almost 30 more over the next several months. This uniform language is a language that needs to look identical so that we can properly call for a convention to propose amendments. It says on line 15, the legislature of the state of Wyoming hereby applies to Congress under the provisions of Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States for the calling of a convention of the states limited to, and that's, by the way, key, limited to proposing amendments to the Constitution of the United States that, one, impose fiscal restraints on the federal government, two, limits the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, and three, limits the terms of office for its officials or and for members of Congress. Now, there are many other things in here. Section 2, I want you to understand, and you can see it right there on line 6, that Section 2 is designed to help people understand the reservations, understandings, and declarations of this particular call so that that people understand very quickly that this is designed specifically for these three very limited topics in this amendment convention. On page number 4, I want to direct your attention to lines 11 through 13. It also says, by definition, a convention of states to propose amendments to the Constitution means that states shall vote on the basis of one state, one vote. Now, we are stating very clearly here something that has always been and always will be. But here on line 13, we're making it abundantly clear. So let me also now, Mr. Chairman, talk to you a little bit about the amendment that was brought. The amendment, Standing Committee Amendment number 1, actually goes then on page number 5 after line 15. And it would become Romanet number 8. And this amendment simply says, the legislature of the state of Wyoming further instructs its delegates not to support term limits for members of Congress that would limit service in any office to less than 18 years. Let me just tell you a little reason why that amendment, why I brought that amendment. Number one, the man known as the father of the Constitution felt that term limits for members of Congress would be inappropriate, primarily because they are subject to a regular election. And so it needs to be something that would be 6 years in length. And so I felt that 12 was too short, but I believe that going longer than 18 years would be too much. And so what I chose there, and this could be subject to your approval or disapproval, but I felt that 18 years would be a sufficient length of time for them to gain the standing necessary in their committee work and the things that are necessary for them to grow in office and understand the various aspects of power. Secondly, sadly, we have watched, no matter who is in the executive branch, we have watched as those individuals, because of the kind of bully pulpit, as one president formerly called it, because of their bully pulpit, they have the opportunity to outshout, if you will, Congress. And so you need individuals that have some longevity, that know how things work, so that they can at least stand against many times the challenges. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would first ask for your approval or for the question on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Winters. Any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment number 1? Question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Joint Resolution 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Winters.
Thank you. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions, and I would move the adoption of this bill.
Discussion on House Joint Resolution 1. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for seeing me behind these fine gentlemen. Thank you. Oh, boy. House Joint Resolution 1 proposes amendments, not one, not three, just verbiage regarding open-ended amendments, plural. I support and agree with the first whereas. We're spending too much. I support the second whereas, I support the third whereas, and I support the fourth whereas. But as for the fifth whereas, on page 2, beginning on line 5 and going through line 10, I begin my dispute that protecting the liberty of our people requires an Article 5 convention. On line 7, again, we see the word amendments, plural. I wish it had said three amendments, but it doesn't. And the words restraining these and related abuses really gives me pause. Who is to determine related? Who is to determine abuses? I see this as opening the door to other possibly related proposed amendments. I maintain that our founders and the drafters of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights intended that the federal government be restrained in its authority over the several states. The first, second, third, and fourth whereases all describe actual current abuses by the federal government of the Constitution as originally crafted. It is up to us, the residents of the sovereign state of Wyoming, to hold the federal government to the limitations imposed on it by the Constitution. A convention, I submit, is irrelevant. As to Section 1, I agree that fiscal restraints in spending and taxing and borrowing on a spendthrift United States Congress needs to be pursued. I agree that limits on the power and jurisdiction of the federal government needs to be reasserted. However, I am adamantly opposed to any call to limit the terms of office for its officials and for members of Congress. Term limits is a popular phrase these days. It is superficially appealing. Term limits are already in place for officials of a presidential administration. When the president's term expires, over 4,000 political appointees are out of a job. However, over 2,700,000 career civil servants and permanent federal government employees are still at their desks. First, term limits on our elected representatives and senators will result in the tyranny of the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy lives by the rules promulgated over decades by their unelected, unaccountable to the voters, political appointee bosses, and runs on sheer inertia. The bureaucracy specializes in developing incredibly complex puzzles of interwoven and sometimes conflicting rules. The vast number of entwined and overlapping federal rules by the crippling bureaucracy, in the words of a recent management report. Without the oversight of an experienced body of duly elected representatives and senators, there will be even less accountability than the bureaucracy has now. As I have heard it said by one bureaucrat here in Wyoming, quote, "We will be here for decades. You representatives come and go. We will simply wait you out." Second, term limits will result in government by staff. We all know the attitude of the stereotypical, with exceptions, of course, tenured staffer. We've always done it this way. A new congressman goes into his D.C. office and is immediately disadvantaged due to his built-in limited tenure. Staffers, however, have known and worked with each other for years. They have their own networks and procedures. Third, polls regularly show a pretty low opinion of Congress. Americans rank Congress at or near the bottom of professions. However, when asked about their individual congressmen, a majority of Americans approve of their own representatives and senators. Polls show that my guy is okay. It's the other 434 that are the problem. I don't think anyone in Wyoming or Texas or other states should deny the folks in the state with the Motor City or the state of the Bayou or the state of the Great Blue Crabs the opportunity to vote for whom they want, regardless of the number of terms that legislator has served. Why we want to tell 600,000 voters halfway across the country, you cannot vote for this person because this person has been in there too long. I don't think I need to go into the lawsuits that will ensue should term limits be proposed by an Article 5 convention. Wyoming and some of our neighboring states have already seen rulings against term limits. Finally, although there is much more to say on the subject, term limits will serve only to entice congressmen to work primarily for their next boss, not their constituents. If she knows she is term limited, a congressman may choose to serve the special interests over the folks at home if there is a possibility of a sweet job at the end of her term. I urge this committee to consider term limits. It's a bad idea. I am going to be bringing an amendment on second reading to delete the word term limits from this call. I understand it will change the call and might even invalidate the call, but you've heard me speak against an Article 5 convention before, and if we invalidated the call, that would not bother me one bit. So, thank you.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm going to attempt to go after the first two questions that were brought up. What amendments is this specifically looking for in what areas? And ladies and gentlemen, of the 64th, if you turn to page 2 under section 1, starting on line 19, that imposed fiscal restraints on the federal government, that's number 1. Number 2, the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, that's number 2. And number 3, and limit the terms of office for its officials and for members of Congress. So that's specifically what this call is doing. And then I wanted to answer, it was kind of made mention in regards to going after the Bill of Rights. And what I find is pretty cool about this call is it actually specifically handles that. So if you turn to page 4, lines 15 through 22 on line 18, this application is made with the express understanding that an amendment that in any way seeks to amend, modify, or repeal any provision of the Bill of Rights shall not be authorized for consideration in any manner. I think that's a pretty strong language and goes towards the fact that it holds our delegates in limitation. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And also, I want to add on to page number 4, leading into page number 5. It also nullifies on lines 22 to line 1 on page number 5, in its initiation, ab initio, if any work that has been done, if it in any way attempts to do anything to the Bill of Rights. And secondly, I really appreciate the honesty and transparency of my good friend who spoke earlier, that the desire would be actually to basically make this this particular resolution of no effect. One thing, though, I appreciated also was most of that argumentation would actually be very helpful, is a good argument for item 3, because and also in the amendment that I brought, I did make that 18 years. But also, if you look at the particular language of the amendment, it says that would limit service to in any office to less than 18 years. One doesn't have to actually have to vote for any term limit at all, but it also says that not less than 18 years. And secondly, I agree that the problem is that the bureaucracy of our federal capital has grown and has gotten too large. But it is the duty of the states in the form of government that we have, which is called a compound government, according to those papers that were written by our founders, it is the duty of the states to stand up against federal power. And so all I'm saying is that D.C. has become addicted to power, and it needs an intervention very badly. And we are the intervention. We gather with the other states and speak against it. And so when you look at the line 22, limit the terms of office for its officials and for members of Congress. Now, we've already defined not less than 18 years for members of Congress, but I do believe that when it comes to that bureaucracy, it would be good to limit the length of time that those officials can stay and accumulate power year after year after year. And actually, most of the argumentation that was delivered would be in approval of basically the third item. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm on and in support of this bill for a variety of reasons. Let me ask you this. Which constitution do you follow? You say there's only one. If you think there's only one, you're wrong. There's actually two. There's a little pocket constitution that we hold and that we really pledge allegiance to. And then there's another constitution that has been interpreted by the courts. In fact, if you were to take that one constitution, I have pictures of it on my phone, by the way, it would stand, if we were to have this podium here, it would probably stand about yay high. You could stack almost all of your statutes together, and that's the constitution that members of Congress follow. That's the constitution that federal courts have ruled over and over and over again regarding what the constitution really means. I think we can come to an agreement that Congress is the problem, or that our federal government is the problem. We have a runaway Congress, we have a runaway judiciary, and we have a runaway executive. And there is nothing that we can seem to do to hold them accountable. We're almost powerless to stop them. So what do we do? What is the solution? Well, I've heard the solution is you just need to elect people who will follow the Constitution. Okay, which Constitution? Because I guarantee you the members in Congress right now think they're following the Constitution, only it's not the one that we think, just the small little Constitution we could put in our pocket. No, they're following the Constitution that's been interpreted by the courts over years and years and years. But the founders, in their wisdom, did give us a provision to fight back against the federal government. It is Article 5. And you've heard this argument before, so I'm not going to belabor this. But what I will say is this is a golden opportunity for states to circumvent the federal government and go straight to the people and propose amendments to the Constitution to rein back that federal power that they run away with. And by the way, for those, I know there's many, we've said it before, but we talk about Article 5. States, you have to have two-thirds of the states must propose an amendment or a convention. That's 34 states. Once that happens, Congress has one obligation. It says they shall call a convention. That's their only authority. And so they choose the time and place in which the convention is called. After that, the convention convenes. You have to have a majority to pass out or propose an amendment. And even then, Congress has the authority to choose which method of ratification. If Congress finds something that is outside of the scope of this application, like repealing the Bill of Rights or something like that, Congress has no authority and no standing whatsoever to propose that to the states for ratification. And so there's so many different checks and balances here. I don't think we're going to change any other minds. I think we're probably locked into where we're voting, and so with that I'll be quiet. But I do support this, and I hope that you would too. On and for. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. You know, we've already passed Joint Resolution Number 2 on a balanced budget amendment. from what my understanding is, there's quite a few states that signed on to that. So I have a question to the bringer of this bill, which I did support this bill. Why are we doing this? Why don't we go through the one where there's just a one-time amendment through Article 5 as to add a bunch more? Because I understand that was kind of the big trouble that we were having before, that there'd be more and more things added. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just answer that question directly. First of all, the reason why this is also of great importance is first, when you look at the first item on line 20, it imposes fiscal restraints on federal government. Now, one thing that we do not want to see is something that would bring about a balanced budget amendment that would raise taxes and so on. This right here is designed specifically to impose fiscal restraint, so it provides sideboards. But secondly, imposing fiscal restraint without shrinking government is something that won't work. Item number two says limiting the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. So it actually addresses the core issue that has created the problem over time. And so that's why this particular bill is very important for all of these efforts combined. I had an individual ask just a few minutes ago how sweeping this has been. In just the last 3 years, 8 states have already adopted this, and over 30 more are looking at it just in the next several months. There will be more than that, but we're looking at something where people recognize this is actually very important. Even considering the previous resolution that was brought, this one is important to impose those sideboards on that.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I doubt if any of us can say anything that will change anybody's mind at this point. But hold on, I'm not done. Even though blessed are the brief, before they shall be loved, I'll try to be brief. I went to the simulated convention with two other representatives in this body. I wanted to see for myself, does this process work? I was more than pleased. It does work, it did work, and I think it will work. So, on and for.
Further discussion? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The gentleman that spoke the other night at dinner said that there last week said that this was going to be a constitutional convention, not on just one subject, but on subject matter, and he was in favor of it. Whenever the other amendments that we have passed in this body came forward, they were supposed to be single subject conventions and that only. In first page 13 through 15 lines, it says, whereas the federal government has invaded the legitimate roles of the states through the manipulative process of federal mandates, most of which are unfunded, this was done by the states giving up the 17th Amendment that was passed. It was the states' responsibility to put senators into office, and they would have been beholden to the states. This problem wouldn't be here if we would have had that still in place today. On page 2, lines 5 through 10, this is opening up the convention to amendments, not just one, but it would open it up to more than one, and all elected officials, it's up to them to uphold the Constitution of the United States and Wyoming's to uphold also the Wyoming Constitution. It isn't just a solemn duty to protect our liberties, it is a solemn duty to uphold the Constitution. This convention is going to open up more than just three amendments to it. It's just on subject matter. So that subject matter can evolve into more than three amendments. On line 22,
limiting the terms of office for its officials and for its members of Congress, lame duck session that we now have will be lengthened from just a couple of months, from November until January. It will be lengthened for 2 years for the House of Representatives and 6 years for the Senate. On page 3, lines 8 through 15, this is trying to limit the authority that Congress already has, which nobody will be able to do that. No matter how hard this body tries, it will not be able to limit what the U.S. Congress can do. On page 4, only the convention has the right to hold this power, from lines 1 through 4. And the bottom, or the end of that line 4, where it talks of Congress, to the last sentence on line 7, Congress has this power. And from the end of that period in line 7, where it starts the power, until line 9, the end of line 9, it will be either by the state legislature, or it will be a ratifying convention that will hold this process. On lines 11 through 13, this will be set by the U.S. Congress. In line 17, limited to the consideration of the topics, this is more than one amendment at a time. In the process of doing these articles to a constitutional convention, we were told in the beginning that it would be limited to one subject and one subject only. And my fears are being recognized. This constitutional convention is going to be opened up to more than one subject, and they think they can hold it to the ones that they choose. We will not be the only ones there, and we will not be the ones that appoint the people, most likely, that are going to do the job that we send them off to do. The end result is going to be a hard one to swallow. I'm afraid that we're looking at a real constitutional convention, what I said, and they said that I was just dreaming of having a runaway convention. This here is also proposing a more than one amendment. The curtain is being drawn back. What is really wanting, they're really wanting, and what will take place. And I don't think the curtain has been pulled completely back. On and against House Joint Resolution 1. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the resolution. Members, just on page 2, and this is where I think I signed on. I know I signed on one of these earlier on the balanced budget. Over the years, I've but the balanced budget seemed like it was so, in my mind, pretty tightly written. But if you go to page 2, lines 20, so the amendments to the United, proposed amendments to the United States that will impose fiscal restraints on the federal government. So what does that mean? To me, that means everything. Everything's on the table. And then you go to the next one, limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. Well, what does that mean? So I wrote my little note beside that that says everything. I mean, that means everything. And then finally, limit terms of office. And, you know, I think we do that at the ballot box. So on against. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the words of the gentleman just before me, all of those things that were listed as potential pitfalls to me are actually something that caused me to want to watch this, to impose fiscal restraint on federal government, and secondly, to limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, because that is exactly what the Constitution initially called for in the 10th Amendment. And all powers that were not specifically listed within the Constitution were supposed to be understood to belong to the states. Now, let me go to the statements that were utilized before, to the speaker just before that. I appreciate, first of all, his love of the Constitution, as we all love the Constitution. And I appreciate the description of the problem. But we must use the solution. that is found within the Constitution. That's what this does. Secondly, when we get to page number three, pages number three and four, where they were talking about Congress and the powers of Congress, and the idea was given that Congress somehow had control over this constitutional convention, or not constitutional convention, but convention for proposing constitutional amendments. By the way, that is the proposing amendments on line 7 actually utilizes the very language of the Constitution. So, I mean, we're not creating something out of whole cloth here. But let me just say, I reference the work of one of the founders in the works that was published under pseudonyms to describe to the various legislatures, specifically the one in the place where the first Capitol was. He tried to explain that Congress has no power, first of all, and that the idea of proposing an amendment is not a constitutional convention. He says this: there can therefore be no comparison between the facility of effecting an amendment and that of establishing in the first instance a complete constitution. Then later on in the same article that was published, he says, nothing in this particular is left to the discretion of that body. He's calling Congress. He says before that, let me just read the words. The Congress shall, quote, call a convention. Nothing in this particular is left to the discretion of that body. And of consequence, all the declamation about the disinclination to a change vanishes in air. He later on says, we must safely rely on the disposition of the state legislatures to erect barriers against the encroachment of the national authority. So when you look at what he's saying very specifically, it's as though he's speaking from that age to you and I today, saying that it is our duty when they grow in power that we stand in the way of the federal encroachment into our jurisdiction. And that's the key. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion that when the committee rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 1 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill having fill a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please please rise. Okay, all those opposed, please stand. More than 17. All right. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Biteman.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Bovey.
No.
Brown.
No.
Bird. Or Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
No.
Clausen.
No.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Court.
No.
Crank.
No.
Dayton.
No.
Edwards. Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
Aye.
Flitner. No. Freeman.
No.
No. Furphy.
No.
No. Guru.
No.
No. Gray.
No.
No. Greer.
No.
No. Haley.
No.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Halverson.
No.
No. Henderson.
No.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
No.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
McGuire.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No. Northrup.
No.
No. Obermuller.
No.
Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
No.
No. Pelkey.
No.
No. Pieperinen.
No.
No. Pawnell.
Aye.
Aye. Salazar.
No.
No. Schwartz. Schwartz.
No.
No. Summers.
No.
No. Steinmetz.
No.
No. Sweeney.
No.
Walters.
No.
No. Wilson.
No.
Winters.
Aye.
Aye. Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 18 aye, 42 no.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Joint Resolution 1 having failed, a roll call vote is indefinitely postponed. Representative Sweeney.
Privilege of the floor.
Yes, please.
Actually, a three-way privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman. It's our great pleasure to introduce a former representative, somebody that I take a little more privilege in calling my second mom and a mentor, representative, former chairman, a lot of stuff, Representative Clarine Law, from, I'm proud to say, the great county of Teton County, even though we're not supposed to.
Hey.
And I would only add, if we could figure out which district is actually the one she served in, I would be able to proudly say I have succeeded Representative Law.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have mic problems here. Mr. Chairman, would it, with your pleasure, to grant privilege of the floor to former chairman, all-time great, wonderful Wyomingite, Ms. Clarine Law? Would that be okay?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, members of the body, I think these guys are being so courteous because they're afraid I'll come back. It was my privilege to serve as David's chairman and to teach this young fellow some things, I think. But I tell you this, that it's been such an honor to serve in this body. I served 14 years chairing Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife and got cultural resources added to that committee. And I'm very proud of that. Just keep it funded. And then I was privileged to serve as Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, and I was his chair. But I'm so proud of all of you, and to see the representative from Natrona in a different, I just see him in his chef's hat or something, and to see my successor in the same House district, the representative from Teton County, and to the impassioned debate I just witnessed. What a wonderful body. Respect the process, respect each other, and come to the tourism event tonight and tomorrow night. That's my name.
Point of order.
Oh, dismissed. Okay. Well, thanks so much. And I am so grateful for the service of everyone here in this body, and I'm so proud to have been one of you at one time.
Representative Law, thank you for your service. Thank you for those remarks, and welcome back to the House. Okay, members, the next bill for our consideration is House Bill 68. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 68, introduced by Representative Zwanitzer. Election ballots. An act relating to elections. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 68, Election Ballots, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Lindholm, Sweeney, Zawanzer. Noes, Representatives Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, and Lone. Signed, Representative Lindholm, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Vice Chairman Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 68 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn over the explanation of the Standing Committee amendments and the bill to the good representative from District number 43.
All right, Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for letting me bring House Bill 68 to you this year. This was an issue that arose in my county, and in two instances, we had a recount process after legislative districts this past year. And I was surprised to find the recount was on Thursday after the election Tuesday evening. And I guess I was just kind of shocked about how many ballots came in the next morning and Thursday morning in the mail. And so when I asked and inquired, they basically informed me that if it wasn't in the box by 7 p.m. at night, they go check the box, any ballots that are there, they don't get counted. And they, of course, informed me they talked to that federal agency responsible for the mail and told them to do all this. And then I talked to that federal agency, and they said, you know, the post office box for the county is downtown. Mail goes in a different facility. They do one trip a day at 10 in the morning. And so while I guess personally believed a lot of these ballots would have come in that Tuesday, they were not counted because they did not show up until the next day in the mail. And when I looked at many of these ballots, they were actually, some were postmarked that Saturday, the Friday, some even a week before from states on the coast, so people who in good faith asked for an absentee ballot. It was sent to them. They tried to get it back in time with postmarks a week in advance, and we did not receive it in time for that vote to be counted. Upon further questioning, I was actually kind of surprised to find out that the county clerks, if the ballot does come in after the fact, they still count them as being a registered voter. And so you as a voter, if you turn in your ballot absentee a week early, you actually don't find out if your vote actually counted or not, because they do count the ballot coming in. They just don't open it up to see who you voted for. And so what I'm attempting to do is to, I guess, fix this problem in good faith with people who, you know, have asked for an absentee ballot. That's all you have to have inquired ahead of time, got the ballot shipped to you. They're expecting it to come back. And it basically just says they have until the county canvassing board meets, so there's still a time limit of that Friday morning and when they get the ballot in. But this would say any ballot that got mailed in good faith Friday, Saturday, even Monday, would still be counted on some of these close races. And as many of you know who've been around legislative politics or any county politics, we have a lot of close races in Wyoming. If I could talk about the Standing Committee Amendment, Mr. Chairman, this is just kind of clean up what you'll see there on page 2, line 14. It changes the word voted to counted. Instead of the Board of County Commissioners or on line 15, we're going to conform with the statute and say the Secretary of State shall make rules and regs in this regard like we do elsewhere in the election code. But the big change there is on the line 11. When originally the bill said postmarked on or before election day, we're just going to say it has to be postmarked before. So these would be people who, hopefully in good faith, mailed in the ballot on Monday. It just didn't arrive in time for the Tuesday deadline. This would be before, obviously, we know who the winners and losers of the election were, and we didn't. There was some testimony people, you know, if they'd asked for an absentee ballot, believed that they couldn't go vote at the polls that day. They had to turn their absentee ballot back in. So we're going to be, I think, a little bit better at the county level on that. But that's the Standing Committee Amendment on the bill, is just some wordsmithing. And then the big change would be they have to have the ballot postmarked the day before, that Monday at the latest, and the ballot still has to be in by Friday for it to be counted. So I'd be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Questions on the Standing Committee Amendment? Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, the House Bill 68, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Furphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have been approached by the organization of clerks, so I won't say their actual organization's names. I don't know why they approached me. They should find someone much more persuasive than I am, but they provided me with a list of their concerns, I guess because I voted no in the committee on this bill. So I'm going to go through their list of concerns if it's appropriate. The first one is if ballots come in and trigger a recount in a close race, there'll be no time to perform a recount prior to the mandated Friday canvass. So they're very worried about the timing there. Number two, there should be voter responsibility. Extending the deadline will simply make people procrastinate even further. Number three, by allowing a postmark date, voters may wait until the day prior to the election to mail the ballot, and there would still be highly likelihood of clerks not receiving the ballots by the Friday canvass. Number four, we currently must get the results to the Secretary of State's office by Friday, not leaving clerks much time after a canvass. Number five, there are concerns about either hand counting ballots, even if legally possible, or having to reopen up another machine to count ballots. Wyoming Statutes 22-14-114 says ballots designed to be counted by machine must be counted by the machine. So they'd have to keep a machine open. Number six, if a voter FedEx a ballot, the question is the sent date considered to be a postmark? There are several other issues. I won't go through all of their issues. I'm just making a point. The clerks are very concerned about the passage of this bill. It puts them in a position where they really may not be able to meet the requirements of the bill, and so they're asking us to not pass this bill. So I'll answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in regards, one of the pieces of information we just heard is that individuals need to take responsibility for their vote. And I agree. However, when did it become the fault of the individual when the federal agency that delivers mail loses their mail? How is that the fault of the individual? And that's all we're asking for here is if something's postmarked on or before, then their vote should count. They've done their job. They've done their due diligence, but we're going to punish them and not count their vote because a federal agency that delivers mail didn't do their job. No surprise. So with that, I reconsider the motive being presented by the association that represents clerks. I think this has a lot more to do with the situation that this will increase workload, as it should. Votes are being counted.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And at the risk, it's not even a risk. I know as I speak, I will be incurring the wrath of my particular county clerk and probably many of those around the state, but I am on and for this bill. We should be doing everything we can to enable people to vote. We should not be making it harder. And part of my logic here is that in many elections, it could be that to be an informed voter, you need to be listening to the debate up to close to election day and requiring someone to mail it as much as a week before in order to meet a standard of having it arrive before they've on election day, I think deprives the voters of that right to be an informed voter. I realize that it will entail more work for the clerks. There might be a couple of pieces of this bill that need to be amended to ensure that it functions properly, but I think this is actually an important bill that we should pass. Thank you.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chairman. Okay, so I need a little help on the timeline here.
The way the law stands right now is you have to have the ballot in on the day of the election. It has to be received so it can be counted at that point in time. My understanding is we're going to keep this open until the canvassing board meets. So that is, you just got to help me out on how many days that is. And my concern is that if you're going to be voting by absentee ballot and you're going to be mailing it in, you know you need to do it in advance regardless. Much like most of us on this floor, we already know how we're going to vote before the final debate is had. So if you could just help me a little bit with that timeline. Thank you.
Representative Blitner.
Mr. Chairman, with all due respect to the bringer of the bill, I thought absentee ballots were for those people who had the luxury of going south for the winter. So they're usually long gone before the election. That was my little stab at levity there. But I figure most people know when those ballots need to be in, and it's time we quit babying society any more than we already do. So I urge you to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had the good fortune to be able to listen to the good county clerks as they were talking in committee, and the testimony I remember, in addition to what's been presented, is that, you know, the voter has to have some responsibility for casting their ballot, and part of that would include making sure the ballot is cast in the right manner and on time. One clerk mentioned the time frame of 45 days prior to the election. I have some experience with close elections, and I can tell you I value every vote equally, and I would support making sure that if it's an education issue that we do everything we can to get the word out, particularly to the young folks, to encourage them to participate. In this election, the comment was made about the additional ballots coming in. I would submit that probably was due to the fact that we had a lot more interest in this election than we have in the past years, and that's a good thing. We had a good election, but I think we need to make sure, just in the interest of fairness, that we have a hard and fast deadline. And on the ballot itself, it does say very clearly what the requirement is. And we've been bending over backwards for years to help people get their vote. They can even deliver the absentee ballot to the voting center and surrender it and vote in person if circumstances would support. So I'm on and against this bill, and I'm definitely in favor of supporting the clerks and making sure that we don't add to their workload and complicate it.
Representative Simons.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on page 2. We're asking line 15, the county commissioner shall adopt procedures for the handling of these ballots. So I was wondering what the estimated cost to the counties would be for that. And then also the federal agency that does deliver the mail sometimes does not have a postmark on the envelope. So those are two concerns. Thank you.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Let me do one round, and I'll probably get some more questions. So trying to go backwards. The first question is, the good news is in the standing committee amendment, we took out county commissioners, went back to the Secretary of State for rules. Whether there's an additional cost or burden to your county clerks, I guess the testimony in one county, they only had two of these come in after the fact. I know in my county we had over 80 in the primary. I guess that can be an administrative burden to count 80 more votes or not, or leave a machine running for 2 days. It's kind of impressive to me that the county clerks, you know, were begrudgingly neutral in committee, and then I guess somehow they seemingly are against this bill on the floor now. So I'll look forward to seeing them tomorrow morning in my committee and having that discussion. Fun how that works. But really, I know some of the testimony was we're trying to enable lazy voters. But let me tell you what really happens. It was 7 days in my county. We actually had mail in the east side of this county you're all in, and instead of it going right to our capital city, it went down to the capital city of our neighbor to the south and then came back up here. I mean, we had people dropping mail in the box on a Friday, and it did not get received until the following Wednesday. And so I would be happy to have an amendment that says it needs to be postmarked the previous Saturday. I don't know what the magic number is, But I do know that that federal agency isn't doing the same job it used to. And I think it's more of a concern when I had people in this county tell me they dropped off right to the mail their ballot on that Monday to the mail center. It doesn't, and this may be a problem in my county, the county clerk gets mailed at a different post office. So it actually has to go through the system and get moved to a different post office by roughly 9 in the morning the next day. It might not be counted. And so I'm not trying to enable laziness. I'm trying to enable those people who in good faith mailed their ballot, thought that even in a local municipality when the post office is there, they drop it off at the post office and it doesn't get there for 48 hours after the election. And the same concern is those people never find out because we already have in law that the ballot officially counts to say they're still in the voter rolls without it actually being counted. The county canvassing board meets on Friday, and now with the amendment, it has to be postmarked at least on that Monday before the election. And so you would hope that if it was postmarked Monday, we would have all those ballots in by Friday morning. And if they're not, they're coming from too far away, they don't get counted just like they don't now. But this was an attempt to get those extra 60, 80, 100 votes in my county counted when people who I at least would submit voted in good faith. And sometimes I don't think the voters are quite as educated in the process as all of us. We heard some testimony. We all know how we're going to vote. But a lot of people don't know how they're going to vote until the weekend before, right? They know who they're voting for, president or legislature. But at least in my county, we have ballot resolutions. We have conservation board. We have a school board. We have our community college board. There's a lot of races, at least in bigger counties, where people say, hey, I'm not ready to make a decision. I want all the information. I mean, you remember the last 2 weeks of the presidential. We had different information about both the presidential candidates coming in every day those last 2 weeks, and people are going, and maybe they'd made up their mind. But I do think even testimony said that a lot more ballots come in the last 3 or 4 days than they do, you know, the first week after absentee voting. The county clerks send all their stuff electronically now on that Friday, so it's not like it has to get mailed down to Cheyenne. No matter where they are, they're emailing it. So I didn't see that as a concern. And we're not talking about an overwhelming number of votes. I mean, my county probably would have the most, and Secretary of State's office is here in my county. I hope I covered all of the questions, but if not, send some at me again, and I'll try to take another roll at them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edwards.
I'm on against this bill. The problem with the bill is that there's going to be a moving target for the election date when it ends. It's now at Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Everything that comes in after that is not counted. Or if you're standing in line, it's cut off at 7 o'clock. It's moved till Friday where there can still be votes counted. In that time period, you could have hanky-panky happen in that time period. Nobody's going to know for sure if their election's close, if it's going to be them or somebody else, if somebody wants to do something. They already know what happened at the polls on Tuesday. And all in all, the responsibility of the voter is to make sure their ballot gets in. I am really not in favor of having the mail-out ballots, the absentee ballots, only for those who need them. But the voting population seems to think they're the wave of the future. And I hope that you'll look at this and that you'll agree with me that this would be a good bill not to pass on to the next body. Thank you. Please vote no.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this bill. And the federal agency that delivers our mail used to go from, I live by the River of Green, you mail your ballot there, it goes to the city with springs that have rocks in it, and then it goes to the capital of the Beehive State. And then it does a reverse move. It goes back from the Beehive State to the city with springs and rocks, and then it comes to the River of Green. It never used to do that. Things have changed. I'm not sure about any hanky-panky going on, but it takes longer for the mail to get from where I live just to the courthouse, which is 4 blocks from where I live. So, and it's not just people who are snowbirds who leave and go down south. There's a lot of railroaders who have to utilize that because they never know when they're going to go to work. They're usually on an extra board. They work 12 hours. They're away from home for 22 hours, come back. They're sleeping the rest of the time, not on the trains, by the way. And so there's a lot of people who use this, and I'd be for this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representatives, or excuse me, Chairman Zwanitz.
Thanks. Just to remind the body of some sideboards that I think I keep saying, but maybe no one's listening to me, so I'll try it real quick again. After the standing committee amendment, they have to be postmarked the day before, so Monday, before the election results are in, before they're counted, before you can have any hanky-panky on who you voted for or who may be close. I guess that was the only singular concern I heard is we tried to put some safeguards. Our county clerk said it's 7 days sometimes for mail in this county. And so if it's a Thursday or Friday, you put the ballot in the box on a Friday, they don't pick up the mail Saturday or Sunday, pick it up Monday morning, you're not getting that ballot in time. And so I'm not trying to enable either laziness or fraud, and I'm all for voter responsibility, but I'm trying to help out those people who in good faith think their ballots are going to be there in time. They never even know. I think it'd be one thing if the county clerk notified them and said, hey, your ballot came in late, it didn't get counted, then you'd see those people swarming all of you saying, hey, something's wrong with this process here. I mailed it in Thursday or Friday, and in good faith, I tried to get my vote in. The problem is they don't ever know if their vote counts or not right now. So I have another question, I guess, Mr. Chairman, and we'll keep going.
Representative Brown.
I'll actually make this no question here to the great chairman. I'm actually rising in support of this bill as well. I think it's critically important for everybody to sit here and think about this for just a second, that if you mailed in your ballot and something happened, God forbid something happened here, that you did not get it mailed in time, your right was just revoked because it didn't get there in time. Your vote did not count. And in this county where we've had two close races, one separated by literally one vote, and that could have been changed. Or in another case where we had it separated by, I believe, 7 or 8 votes. Those votes make a huge difference. We're not talking about a massive influx of voter registration reels coming in. This is, I completely understand the sentiment that there is some responsibility in the voter, and I agree with that. But there's also this opportunity that something can happen. And God forbid something happens to the point that you are rushed down to a hospital or you have something happen to you and you don't get that in. You now have just that hair amount of extra time that if you're back on that Monday, you get to cast that ballot. That's all we're trying to do here. We're not saying you have a moving target, as I heard. We're not saying you have a whole bunch of grace period time. We're just giving that one extra day that's sitting there and those extra few days before the canvassing board meets for these votes to be counted. I'd like any one of you to go out and tell your constituents that their vote didn't count. I don't think that would go over too well.
Representative Henderson.
When I was in the service, I used the absentee process regularly when I was in the combat zone and not. And I had full faith in the people in the state to take care of my vote. And when I mailed it, I had questions a lot of times whether it would get there in time. But I knew in my mind, in my heart, that I had done my duty and voted. Now, I've heard it said more than once that getting these votes in whenever they come in could make a difference. Well, maybe, maybe not. Sometimes I think that might be wishful thinking, speculative, or conjecture. I could easily not be here for that one vote. And that's why I place equal value in every vote, even those who didn't vote for me. And I think we're better off leaving the hard and fast 7 p.m. or if you're in line so that there is no creation of unintended consequence of misunderstanding by folks out who are voters who mean well, but maybe they don't know for sure given the change of a day before, a week before, 2 weeks before. They have 45 days. It says it on the ballot, and I think that's pretty clear. So we have to assume individual responsibility for our vote.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One clarification on what have just been said. If an individual doesn't send in their absentee, they can still go to the polls that day if they have not sent it in. And that's the point, that gets to the point that the clerks are making, because they have a list of who sent in their absentee. And now that list is going to have some questions on it. Now they're going to have to go back and look to see if the person might have shown up again on election day. And I think that gets to the point here. But if someone doesn't send in their absentee ballot, they can still show up. And that's why they have the list there of those who have voted absentee. Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we go through some of these discussions, I think sometimes we forget about the people that have to administer them. And as has been pointed out, there's a group of individuals around the state that have to do this, the clerks. And I know that in the county, that's, if you had to rank them, would be number 10. When that clerk speaks, Lloyd listens. And she has said that it would probably be best to look at this on an interim. They understand that there's a problem. They're not opposed to approaching it and try to rectify the problem for the well-being of all voters in the state. They just ask us to hold off, let them study it, and then come back and get it fixed without the flaws in it. So I would encourage you to hold off on that and listen to the folks that have to administer it and maybe come back and deal with this another year.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill was first brought to this body in 1992. It's been brought 5 times since, all during the good tenure of the clerk from the good county number 10. I think we've had a whole lot of time to think about it. It's been an ongoing issue, and we even have in statute they have to hold on to these ballots for 2 years. No one seems to remember why, but I guess I would push back. The reason in the standing committee amendment that we made it that Monday is so we don't have people who were showing up to vote answering an absentee ballot. That's certainly already a possibility now. If you have an absentee, you can mail in your absentee, and if you accidentally show up to vote on election day, you'll be double counted, and we do have processes to fix that problem.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Vice Chairman Lindholm's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 68 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Ooh, I'm going to say that the voice vote has failed. We need a standing division vote. All those in favor, please rise. All right. All those opposed, please stand. More than 15, you can be seated. Thank you. A roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen. Allen, no. Baker. No. Barlow. Aye. Biteman. No. Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bovey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
No.
Clausen.
No.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Court.
No.
Crank.
No.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Ayer.
No.
Flitner.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Furphy.
No.
Guru.
Aye.
Gray.
No.
Greer.
No.
Haley.
No.
Hallinan.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Henderson.
No.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone.
No.
Laux.
No.
McGuire.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
Aye.
Obermueller.
No.
Olson.
No.
Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Piperinen.
No.
Ponell. No. Salazar.
No.
No. Schwartz. Aye. Summers.
No.
No. Steinmetz.
No.
No. Sweeney. Aye. Walters.
No.
No. Wilson.
No.
No. Winters.
No.
No. Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
No. Are there any changes? Hunt? Aye to no. Blackburn? Aye to no. Other changes? Closing vote? The vote is closed. 13 aye, 47 no.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Bill 68, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill, Mr. Majority Whip Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Privilege of the floor?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, fellow members of the 64th, in the back we have Rose Robertson and her high school class from Pinedale High School, government class. So would you please welcome them to the House?
Welcome to the House.
Hey.
Yes, Chairman Zwanitzer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I forgot until I just saw him that the Boys State Governor is actually among those. So if he would stand up again. This is the current Governor of Boys State.
All right. Any other privileges? Doesn't sound like it. All right. And the next bill for our consideration is House Bill 192. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 192, introduced by Representative Nicholas. Court Automation Fee, 2, an act relating to court fees. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee, 2, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux, excused Representative Claussen. Signed, Representative Greer. Mr. Chairman, this bill was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Greer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report to do so, the recommendation of the House Bill 192 do pass, and for an explanation of the bill, I'll turn it over to the fine gentleman from House District Number 8.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you a bill that has been proposed by our judiciary system. And in way of background, and to simple, I really want to make this simple if I can. Since 2002, there's been a court automation fee that has been instituted on circuit and district courts and also on some city courts. The purpose of the automation fee, beginning back in 2002, was to create an e-filing system through our various court processes, and we're on the way to that. But what's happened is now we've gone from the Supreme Court e-filing system down to the circuit court and district court e-filing systems. Over the course of the years, in order to implement this e-filing system, for the last 3 or 4 biennium, they have come back to the legislature over and over again asking for supplemental budget requests to kind of get this thing off the ground and get it moving. And it's been kind of a slow process. They've actually reverted some of those funds. Last year last biennium, they got $2.7 million, which they actually put to use, and they're moving forward. They've got a new folks out there. But let me tell you, in a nutshell, what this thing does. It adds $10 to the filings in civil court for both civil and criminal proceedings. And so these are folks that are in court either as a crime victim's compensation part of their obligation, or as filing fees when you file a docket. And what's happened, in order to do e-filing throughout the statewide system. You have to have uniformity in software, uniformity in hardware, uniformity in a lot of the capabilities and even printing capabilities amongst the district courts. And so we're taking this function of filing process from the district courts and circuit courts and doing the overall monitoring of it in the Supreme Court and that in one of their administrative duties. They now have 13 full-time employees that do nothing but work on computer software, hardware, three folks that go around the state and basically educate, train, and do system maintenance on the various items that are going around the state. They have about an 8-year build-out plan now to effectuate all of the court automation functions, to upgrade all the systems and all the circuit court and district courts, and there's 15 localities, municipalities that also participate and others can join to this system. And basically, so all those computers can talk to each other, and it allows e-filing, and it makes a uniform system for all the collection of fees and fines and things like that. Right now, between all these courts, they collect well over 50 to $60 million a year in fines and other revenues that need to be processed, sent around. So this uniform system basically adopts all of those duties and obligations, and this $10 additional fee helps pay for it. Right now, they've had to get supplemental budgets in order just to maintain it, and so this basically will take, hopefully, away those requests for supplemental budgets. It'll pay for the system that they've got stretched out. It also adds basic upgrades to the various courts around the state for sound systems, particularly for hearing for the impaired for juries and in the jury rooms, some basic projector obligations that just don't exist in the courts. In essence, what this really does is takes more of the responsibility of the uniform filing system and centralize and creates a centralization kind of like our ETS, where we took our computer systems and said we can do this better, and actually the only way we can do it uniformly is to do it in one uniform system. So it's collecting funds by the participants in the courts to effectuate that plan. And if you have any other questions, I mean, it's really fairly simple. It raises roughly $1.5 million a year to the system. So with that, if I don't have any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them. So.
Any discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Greer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 192 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 192 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 237. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 237, introduced by Appropriations. Community College Capital Construction, an act relating to community college facilities. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 237, Community College Capital Construction, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Nicholas?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it does so with a recommendation that House Bill 237 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from the center part of the state.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before you is the Community College Capital Construction Bill, and this is really a simple bill today. What we are doing is allowing these projects to move forward and allowing them to spend their private funds. These are projects that had a matching portion from the state, and the state is still waiting on our share to come in, but they have raised their private share, and they want to move these projects forward, and so with the approval of this bill, they'll be allowed to move those projects forward. I could go through them project by project, but the activity on each project is the same, so please vote aye.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 237 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 237 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 74. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 74, introduced by Representative Lindholm. Agent Orange Health Awareness Month, an act relating to state-recognized commemorative days. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 74, Agent Orange Health Awareness Month, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blake, Brown, Court, Crank, Edwards, Eklund, Laux, Piperinen. Excused, Representative Blackburn. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman.
For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Chairman Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 74 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And I will turn the explanation of the bill over to the bill sponsor.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No matter what your personal view might be to whether our country should have been involved in the Vietnam War or not, we can all agree that too many American veterans of Vietnam are sick and dying from cancers, some relatively common cancers and some that are very rare. The same goes for Vietnam veterans from the other nations. So due to the enemy fighting tactics the U.S. military had not frequently encountered, our military and the South Vietnamese fighters needed a way to weed out the Viet Cong from the dense jungles because they could no longer protect themselves from an unseen enemy. With much trepidation, the U.S. government tentatively signed in on the use of herbicides in Vietnam. The operation that came with this decision became known as the Operation Trail Dust, and more specifically for the handlers of the rainbow herbicides, Operation Ranch Hand. Operation Ranch Hand would spray an area of 6,600 square miles over the course of the war, an area roughly equivalent to the size of two very small states in this in our country. Through no fault of the military, they did not know the side effects of handling Agent Orange, specifically day after day. They told the men only normal sanitary precautions are required when handling these liquid chemicals. That is, washing with mild soap to remove any of the residues from exposed skin and showering and changing clothes if an amount was liberally splashed on them. However, the dread effects attributed to dioxin do occur frequently in humans. About 20% of the United States population dies from cancer. That's a large fraction, perhaps the majority of all pregnancies end in spontaneous abortions, often so early that the woman is unaware that she had even been pregnant, and 3% of all live-born babies suffer from serious structural birth defects. During transportation of large shipment of Agent Orange from Gulf Shores, a hurricane struck the area, causing the ship to lose its cargo of Agent Orange. This is off our own coast. While most of the barrels were located somewhere around, 240 barrels went missing and have never been found. Knowing this, one can draw the scary conclusion there's still dioxin leaking into the Gulf of Mexico, and that these molecules will be there for an extended period of time. To dispose of the rest of the Agent Orange they did not use by the end of 1971, the U.S. military took it to the Johnson Atoll and burned it. VA hospitals are doing their very best to treat our veterans, but we still do not know the extent to which dioxin will endanger future generations. It has been estimated the toxin will alter the DNA for as many as 5 or more generations. So unless we do something to clean up our world and to try to dehalogenate the dioxin molecules, our world will no longer get better for a while. The diseases and death will only continue. It's a bleak outlook, but it could be very well true. So with that, I'm gonna give you some of the... I'm just going to go through the bill and if we have any questions. So first of all, I'd like to say if you turn to the fiscal note, this doesn't actually cost anything. Specifically, we're naming a certain month. We're naming the month of August. A lot of states have adopted a month within their states recognize this. Most are August or October. We chose August specifically. A constituent that helped me with this piece of legislation specifically chose August because of the large amount of motorcycles that roll through our great state on their way to the state to the east of us during the month of August. And a lot of those individuals happen to be Vietnam War veterans. So this piece of legislation, starting on page number 1, we start off with the Agent Orange Health Awareness Month, 84110. We recognize that up to 5 generations can be affected by Agent Orange. Specifically, we're looking at babies that are born with spina bifida and other type of debilitating diseases. And mind you, that's through no fault of anyone. Our country didn't know. didn't know that this was going to affect our soldiers in this way. But it has affected our soldiers in this way. So why recognize this? Why look at this situation? We need to bring awareness to what's going on. There's a lot of untreatment going on. There's a lot of distreatment going on. There's a lot of aspects of these cancers going on that aren't being recognized because nobody knows that they're actually attributable to something that either happened with their parentage or something that happened while they were over there. Going over to page 2, we talk about what happened. We talk about the 19 million gallons of herbicide that was sprayed throughout South Vietnam, with Agent Orange accounting for approximately 11 million gallons, causing the United States Department of Veterans Affairs to presume that all veterans who served in Vietnam were exposed. Mr. Chairman, we go down to B on page 2. The governor, not later than July 10th of each year, shall issue a proclamation requesting proper observance of Agent Orange Health Awareness Month and requesting health care military. I'm going to jump right quick over to the Standing Committee Amendment, and this is something that was brought by the commission that represents and handles Veterans Affairs here in the state of Wyoming. Specifically, it states on your amendment, the Wyoming Veterans Commission, in conjunction with the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, shall develop and publicize a campaign during the month of August to encourage Wyoming Vietnam veterans and their family to register with the United States Department of Veteran Affairs Agent Orange Registry Health Exam. The Wyoming Veterans Commission may encourage Wyoming Vietnam veterans to schedule and take the Agent Orange Registry Health Exam. The Wyoming Veterans Commission shall develop and publicize an outreach campaign to notify Wyoming veterans of changes to the presumptive medical conditions associated with Agent Orange as recognized by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. Also on page 2, line 8, we also delete shall and insert a may, and that's specifically because we don't know. August is a tough month for some of these public schools to be able to have a program set in place. So we change that into a May for some of those schools that may start earlier in August versus later in August. They'll be able to have something as far as recognizing this if they so choose, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'll stand for questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 74. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 74 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 74 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, we're going to move up House Bill 209 as our next bill, and then the list stays the same.
All right. We are now on House Bill 209. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 209, introduced by Representative Connolly, Disparity in Wages and Benefits Between Men and Women, an act relating to employment. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 209, Disparity in Wages and Benefits Between Men and Women, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Claussen, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, and Laux. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chairman Laux?
Mr. Speaker, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 209 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I will turn that over to Representative Connolly, Minority Floor Leader, to explain the bill.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I bring you House Bill 209, Disparity in Wages and Benefits Between Men and Women, and ask for your favorable consideration. First, let me move the Standing Committee Amendment. What the Standing Committee Amendment does is on page 1, line 9, it deletes the clause that says pursuant to 922604B, which we don't need. That was pointing the Department of Workforce Services to a very particular fund within the department, and it's not necessary. And so I would ask for your favorable consideration on the Standing Committee Amendment unless there are any questions.
Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 209. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Friends, Wyoming has, it's just been reported once again, the largest wage gap between men and women in the nation. That number gets reported yearly. For the past 15 years, we've been at the bottom of the barrel. Honestly, last year we weren't 50th, we were 49th, but we're back to being 50th. So that figure is what I would call a gross figure, not meaning that it's ugly, but that it is a large figure that simply looks at the wages, the average wages of a man working full-time year-round in comparison to women working full-time year-round. And again, we come in worse in the nation. This is an issue that hits the news whenever that report comes out. In addition, earlier this month, so within the past couple of weeks, one of the magazines that gets read by CEOs of major organizations had a headline that said, Wyoming's women are worse. And that was talking about the wage gap, and in particular, that article was about retirement earnings. And that wage gap for women versus men is 64.4 cents on the dollar. In fact, the next state is 68 cents on a dollar, so we're even cents behind that one. But this article was talking about the earnings needed to have a retirement and talked about how Wyoming's women needed to earn $1.55 an hour for every dollar that a man earned in order to have the same nest egg. Okay, so this body, 15 years ago, commissioned the University of Wyoming to do a study, and it was titled The Disparity in Wages and Benefits Between Men and Women. What this bill does is direct the Department of Workforce Services to update that study, and to do so using as specific information as they have available to them, including countywide data and occupational data. And so what this bill does is direct the Department of Workforce Services to do that study and report it to two standing committees. Now, what some of you know and others don't is that the two sponsors of the bill, me and my co-sponsor, are often at odds with each other in the newspaper. Believe it or not, yes. And so, we both have a desire for good data and good information. And so we decided that we would co-sponsor this bill together to illustrate the different sides. One saying that the wage gap between men and women is an important issue that needs to be addressed in this state. And I will let my good friend, my representative over to my right here, talk for herself, but saying that no, it's a myth that we don't. So let's get good updated data so that we can make good decisions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I couldn't agree more with my colleague. The study needs to be done. Wyoming cannot thrive as a state if we've got the reputation of being discriminatory in the way we pay men versus women. We have got, if we're going to attract dual income families, a husband and a wife, we need both parties to know that they will be paid fairly. Now, there is a 64 cent wage gap. I will concede that. But the U.S. Census Bureau comes up with this, and here's how it's calculated. All the wages earned by men are added up in column A. All the wages earned by women are added up in column B. The difference is the wage gap, the gender wage gap. We cannot let this stand on its face. We need a study that compares apples to apples and oranges to oranges. The full-time component, the full-time year-round component is different for men and women. The Bureau in Washington that gathers statistics regarding labor now counts 30 hours a week as full-time. And I think a study will show that more women prefer 30 hours a week than, say, the men who work up in the rigs who work 60 hours a week. So that goes to some extent to explain the disparity in what a man will earn and what a woman will earn. There are myriad examples, reasons that women earn less than men. A lot of it has to do with choice. Choice of career, choice of hours, choice to leave the workforce, or choice to work only 30 hours a week. We need a study to answer these questions. Are employers paying women less for the exact same job, the exact same hours worked, the exact same qualifications of education and experience, or are women just earning less because it is their choice? We cannot have this reputation as a state that discriminates against women in the labor force. Please help us, my good colleague and I, put this bill forward, move this bill forward. Let the department that deals with services in the workforce, they're perfectly capable of putting together a good study. I got a really lot of good information from them as I studied the what gender wage gap. I think they're the perfect entity to do this, and I urge your support of the bill.
Question. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think we should have the question until we talk a little bit about this fiscal note. It looks to me like this is a feel-good bill that's going to usurp $100,000 up to $100,000 from the Workforce Development Training Fund. And I imagine this that those dollars were appropriated for some purpose other than doing a study that I think most of us already know the answers to. And I don't know. What did the department say about this? They want us to have this money diverted from its intended use to doing this or not?
Representative Pinnell.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm opposed to the bill. I received a call last night basically voicing concern about the bill, and it is basically to the cost. It's a pretty expensive cost on it, and again, I think we're going to know the outcome of it. We look back when this was first done back in 2003, the state was flush with money. We're not so flush right now. I know there's probably jobs out there that they have a difference in pay scale, but I know the previous job that I worked at that I'd done the hiring on, they were on an equal basis. So I think Wyoming's coming a long ways from years past, but I personally don't think that there needs to be a study on this at this time. So I urge you vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Madam Minority Floor Leader. No. Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was able to access the same database that generated the 64-cent wage gap
recalculated that number. There's some other information in those studies that I was also able to recalculate. I can tell you that the numbers are based on a scant set of information, and that the study is basically looking at, as the good representative in the far corner mentioned, that the study actually studied the vertical look of occupations in the state rather than a horizontal look. Also, if you look at the details of those studies that create the 64 cents, you will find that that's not true across lines of industry. So if you would like to see the details of that study, I have those. And the industries that they ought to analyze in order to solve the problem turn out to be the extractive industries and the construction industry. Within those categories, there is no wage gap calculated. So if anyone is interested in following up on what I've learned about this, I'd be happy to share that information. Thank you.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for the good comments and questions. And getting to the last two, and then I'll get to the good Chairman of Revenue's question about the fiscal note. This is exactly why we want that study done. There is a variety of information out there that is typically univariate rather than multivariate, looking at one particular element. Again, the wage gap figure is full-time year-round. It doesn't take into account hours worked, other elements, right? But that is the figure that gets reported every year, and it hits the national news, and we're at the bottom of the barrel, all right? But that is the figure. But if we want more nuanced data, we want multivariate analysis rather than univariate analysis, this study should be redone. It gives us a far more sophisticated look at how to talk about those economic sectors that the good representative from the middle of the state just talked about. It gives us the ability to look at occupations and hours. It will give us the relevance of factors such as education and specific vocational training. Those are important elements that we need to take a look at in Wyoming in order to be able to understand and then perhaps respond to, right, either that information or what to do about it, all right, depending on what the study comes out with. And then to answer the question regarding the fiscal note, know that what we just deleted was talking very specifically about that workforce training fund. But to understand about that fund, the data in Fund 528, which is that workforce development training fund, right now has $13,518,451 in it. The burn rate for each of the past 5 years has been approximately $2 million. There is plenty of money in there if it's needed. So thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I urge this body to support this study. This has been an issue in the state for several years now. Let's put it to bed. Let's either do something about it or put it to bed. I don't know what the study will find. I have an idea, but I could be wrong. So let's put this to bed right now. Let's get Wyoming out of this reputation. And please vote aye on the bill. And let's get this study done once and for all. And my colleague has made brilliant remarks on this subject. I have nothing else to add, but she's absolutely correct. We need to pass this bill and get this study done.
You ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Vice Chairman Lauck's motion that when a committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 209 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 209 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. 32. All those opposed, please stand. Like I said, pass the committee of the whole. All right. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 140. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I believe the next bill is House Bill 128.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Are we doing 128 and then 176? Is that the order?
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. All right, the next bill for our consideration is House Bill 128. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 128, introduced by Representative Allen, Tribal License Plates, an act relating to motor vehicle registration. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 128, Tribal License Plates, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blake, Brown, Court, Crank, Eklund, Piperinen. Noes, Representatives Edwards and Laux. Excused, Representative Blackburn. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your what is your pleasure, Chairman Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 128 do pass, and I further turn the explanation of the bill over to the bill sponsor.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your inbox, you have a copy of one of the sample license plates. It's a color copy, so take a look at that. This is a great bill. This is the third time we've the last 2 years we passed it out of this body, and there was no action in the other body. So this is the third time, and I'm going to keep bringing it as long as I'm elected. But this is a really simple bill. What it does is it would provide for a tribal license specialty plate developed in consultation with the tribes and WIDOT to come up with their own version of a license plate. It will still be a Wyoming license plate. The bucking horse will be on there and all of that. But what it does, it honors and recognizes the tribes. Now, what we have done with this bill is we have opened it up so that anybody could buy it, and that it has a scholarship component so that the majority of the money from this sale would go to two scholarships for Indian children or students. One is the Chief Washke Endowment, and the other one is the Northern Arapaho University, the one over the hill. Scholarship. To date, there have been 223 Northern Arapaho students have taken that scholarship to go to the great university over the hill, and 157 Shoshone students have taken opportunity for the Chief Washke Endowment. So what the bill does, like I said, is it provides for consultation with the Highway Department and the tribes. And since it's a specialty plate, $30 of that goes back into the highway fund. So it would only take 283 plates to pay for the cost of printing these plates, and it would provide a scholarship fund. So I really don't need to go on and on. I don't think I just want to remind everybody that our Indian neighbors are historically patriotic. They've fought in every war for the last several, and that this is a great bill, and I'm just going to shut up because brevity is the soul of everything.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 128 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
I'm going to say the House Bill 128 has passed. The division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Less than 36. You can be seated. Like I said, House Bill 128 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 176. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 176, introduced by Representative Walters. Veterans Tuition Waiver Program Requirements, an act relating to veterans. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 176, Veterans Tuition Waiver Program Requirements, respectfully reports back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Court, Crank, Edwards, Eklund, Laux, Piperinen. Noes, Representatives Blake and Brown. Excused, Representative Blackburn. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 176 do pass. And I turn the explanation of the bill over to the sponsor.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a Veterans Tuition Waiver Program, and it's a program that was set up in the about 2006-2007 time frame. It allows for veterans to go to school here at a higher level of higher education, community college, the university, and do those sorts of things. And so with this bill, all I've done is try and tighten it up a little bit to require the people that are eligible to be Wyoming high school graduates or get your GED here in Wyoming. And then it also is to, currently there's folks that are taking graduate school and postgraduate work on this scholarship program. And so this is to hopefully tighten it up to just undergraduate work. There is a standing committee amendment, and so I will let the bringer of that I will let the bringer of that amendment explain what it does. But the whole purpose of the bill and even the amendment is just to tighten up these requirements to try and make sure that the funds we're spending are really going for Wyoming's born and bred type of kids.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 176 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, the 64th, I think what we did here with the original bill was kind of a knee-jerk reaction to a situation with this program. This program has been a very, very phenomenal program for many of our veterans across the state, and we have a lot of people taking advantage of it. But the problem is we don't really have any sideboards on it. And so I think what we have seen with this particular bill and then some of the others that we've tried to pass, you know, as far as restricting some of these expenditures, this was just a knee-jerk reaction. It didn't really land what we were trying to do with it. So what this amendment does is we're actually going to be pulling back the requirement that you're a resident of a Wyoming high school. And the reason I don't think that you need a high school graduate, the reason I don't think you need to have that is we have a lot of veterans that come here, and they're not high school residents. They're 18, 19 years old, and they're coming into Wyoming, and they decide that they're going to shack up here, and they like it. What's going on here. They may stay here for 15, 20 years. Who knows? So we want to be able to offer that to them, and we're currently doing that. So I don't think that that's necessarily what we want to do. So that's the first section of this Standing Committee Amendment, is getting rid of the necessity that you have to be a Wyoming resident and a high school graduate from Wyoming. The next thing that we do is we do put some more sideboards on this, because I have to agree, when you start looking at this program, there's a lot of information in this. Just there's a ton of information that you just sit there and go, wow, I cannot believe that we don't have any more sideboards on this. So this attempts to save this program a little bit. So what we do is on the amendment itself, on line 11, we restrict the amount of tuition to 8 semesters. That's a total of 4 years. currently there's no limit on the amount of tuition that can be provided for this. So we're going to set this down for a total of 8 semesters, a total of 4 years that this person can do this. The next thing that we're going to do is we're going to reinsert all the stricken language that's currently in the bill on line 10 on page 2 that just says, you have to be a resident of this state, basically. So you still have to claim residency here for at least a year before you can take advantage of this. The next thing that we're going to do is we're going to restrict this and really make this a very, very good bill. What I would like to say is that what this portion of the amendment does is you have to utilize all of your GI Bill, all of the available funds that are available for you that come from being inside the VA system. You have to use those before you can come use the state of Wyoming's dollars. That really restricts the amount of people that are going to be taking advantage of this program. And so that's probably the biggest kicker here is we have a lot of people that are coming in here using all of Wyoming's funds and not expending a penny out of their GI bills. So we want to make sure that they're using those before they're using ours. So this is a really good opportunity to save this program a little bit of money. And then the last thing that you do is you actually on Section 2, they have to sign an affidavit saying that this is exactly what they're doing before that they before they're willing to or before they're able to get the provided funding out of this program. That way we have it on record with the Community College Commission or the commission that deals with community colleges and the university over the other side of the hill. We have the capability of making sure that they're doing their due diligence and making sure that we're not just expending a ton of income on this. So this is a great program. I want to save it, and I think we have a really good opportunity here to save this. But doing the knee-jerk reaction and just saying that it's only Wyoming high school graduates that get this won't save us any money. We heard testimony in the committee that actually said all of the students that are utilizing this program right now are high school students that graduated from Wyoming. So this actually won't save us any money in the interim work. So we are actually trying to tighten this up a little bit more, and that's I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if the last statement was true because I am an advisor to a vets program or a club at the college that I work for. I strongly support this amendment. A lot of these gentlemen and women that I help came to Wyoming after they've been in. Some of them have resided here for 5 or 10 years before they decided to come back to school. By taking that you have to be a graduate from a Wyoming high school allows our adopted sons to take advantage of this program. So on and for the amendment and on for the bill.
Speaking on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I would like to divide the amendment, and lines 9 and 10 being Division 1 and the remainder of the amendment being Division 2. And what that does in lines 9 and 10, that's the high school's graduate requirement, and to me that's something that is important. I'd like to see us continue to look for these kids that have came from Wyoming. And so
Representative Walters, I'll rule that is divisible, and I'll let you speak to you. Would you like to speak to Division 1?
Division 1, please.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like I said, I think this requirement requiring these folks to be Wyoming high school graduates is an important component to this scholarship program, and so I would encourage you to support the fact that they're high school graduates.
Mr. Chairman.
Majority Whip Summers.
Mr. Chairman, I might call a point of order. I just want to ask to relook at that because it appears to me that on page 4 there is also the requirement for a Wyoming graduate. So my question is to the chair and the bringer of the division. Did you include 2 through 4 on page 4, which is also similar to the language on page 2, lines 10 through 11?
You are, Mr. Majority Whip, I believe you are correct. And so the way that it is devised right now, it's not divisible. If you look at that, I think there might be a way that you could divide that. But we'll let you look at that. Chairman, Representative Walters.
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I'd like to add that to the original section number one. That's a good catch, and that was a mistake that I had drawn out but forgot to mention when I was doing this. So I think it's just a technical correction. That is the same verbiage, and so that would be part of one, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman. So with that, Mr. Chairman, it's section one would be lines 9 and 10 and lines 20 and 21.
Representative Walters, I think you're going to have to add lines 4 and 5 to division one as well. Lines 4 and 5 deletes that section that you're trying to keep. On the amendment, lines 4 and 5. We're going to stand at ease for just a moment. Yeah, it repeals. All right, Committee of the Whole will come to order. So Division 1 is going to be lines 9 and 10 and 20 and 21. We got that? All right. Thank you for that point of order, Mr. Majority Whip. For your first time, Representative Walters, and he spoke. Anybody else for their first time? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, on and for Division 1, big reason that this is for is exactly what I stated in the beginning. We actually have had a couple other pieces of legislation that have looked to bring in youth into the state of Wyoming, and this is exactly what this particular amendment does, is it attempts to bring in additional youth into the state of Wyoming and not discourage those that are not from Wyoming from being able to receive this eligibility. I think doing the tightening up that we're doing elsewhere in the amendment is well worth it, but I don't believe that we need to worry about restricting this to only high school graduates. That was not the original intent of the legislation when it was passed, and I don't think that's what we would do at this point as well.
For your first time, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The other thing that I'd like to remind the body is that these training programs and even people that attend our community colleges and the big place across the hill, the average age is 27 years old. So we're long past high school. So I support bringing more people into trained. Wyoming also needs a trained workforce, and we're short on that.
Anybody else on Division 1? Question being called on Division 1. Members, this is lines 9 and 10 and 20 and 21. Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, Division 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, Division 1 has passed. We are now on Division number 2. Are you ready for the question? Question being called on Division 2 of Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 176. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Division number two has passed. We are back on the bill. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 176 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 176 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great job. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. Wait. Yeah, you've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion passes.
Thank you.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
January 30th, 2017. Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 136, recommended do pass. House Bill 137, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 194, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 220, recommended do pass. House Bill 242, recommended do pass. House Bill 180, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 213, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 191, recommended do pass. House Bill 229, amended, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution 1, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 68, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 192, recommended do pass. House Bill 237, recommended do pass. House Bill 74, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 209, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 128, recommended do pass. House Bill 176, amended, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Clem, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Congratulations, Representative Clem. Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having voted on the prevailing side, I move that for the reconsideration of House Bill 159 at the end of third reading tomorrow, January 31st, 2017.
That does not require a second, and House Bill 159 will be on a reconsideration vote at the end of third reading. Thank you. Representative Kinner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Fellow members of the 64th, it's not very often that we have folks from close to the Montana border, from my hometown, be in Sheridan. So I would like you to welcome a teacher at the high school up there in Sheridan, an AP history and U.S. government, and former soccer coach, but maybe even more importantly, Mr. Speaker, football coach with the Sheridan Bronx. I think they won the state championship recently. Let's welcome Kevin.
You know, welcome to the house, Coach Reiser, and of all things, it's on Mustang Monday today. Of all things, we got to hear that Bronc talk. Okay. Anyone else for any other privileges of the floor? Reports from standing committees.
House Bill 215, introduced by Representative Blackburn. Drug-induced infant endangerment, an act relating to crimes and offenses. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 215, drug-induced infant endangerment, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Bightman, Jennings, Olson, Pannell, Salazar, and Winters. Noes, Representatives Baker, Kirkbride, and Pelkey. Signed, Representative Kirkbride. House Bill 162, introduced by Representative Madden. Property tax assessment rates, an act relating to property tax. Mr. Speaker, your committee number three, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 162, property tax assessment rates, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Connolly, Dayton, Furphy, Kenner, Madden, Obermuller, Paxton. Noes, Representatives Hallinan and Larson. Signed, Representative Madden, Chairman. House Bill 174, introduced by Representative Clem, Game Road Kill, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 174, Game Road Kill, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Edwards, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Noes, Representatives Byrd, Ayer, Furphy. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. House Bill 235, introduced by Representative Miller, Mentor Small Game and Game Bird Hunting, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Speaker, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 235, Mentor, Small Game and Game Bird Hunting, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garrew, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, and Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman. House Bill 231, introduced by Representative Laux, Firearm Possession, Allow Felons Antique Firearms, an act relating to firearms. Mr. Speaker, your committee number nine, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 231, Firearm Possession, Allow Felons Antique Firearms, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Lindholm, Laux. Noes, Representatives Claussen and Henderson. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman. House Bill 238, introduced by Representative Connolly, Nude Image of Minor Disseminated or Possessed by a Minor, an act relating to crimes and offenses. Mr. Speaker, your committee number nine, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 238, Nude Image of a Minor, Disseminated or Possessed by a Minor, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Claussen, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson Laux. Noes, Representative Lindholm. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman. House Bill 253, introduced by Representative Harshman. Economic Development Accounting Funding, an act relating to economic development. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 253, Economic Development Account Funding, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux. Noes, Representatives Claussen and Gray. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize our courtesy committee chairman, Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You probably notice sitting among us today is someone who's been absent for a little while. He took a little leave of absence up to the hospital here in town, but we've been missing this guy, my chairman of Ag. And I just want to welcome him back and everybody give him great prayers and thoughts for the rest of the session, healthy and wise. Welcome back, Representative McKim. Did you want me to sing something, Mr. Speaker?
We'll wait till we adjourn. Thank you, Chairman Blake. Welcome back, Chairman McKim. Messages from the Senate.
Messages from the Wyoming State Senate, January 30th, 2017. Message number 181. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 25, Wildlife Location and Research Information Confidentiality. Ayes 26, noes 3, excused 1. Message number 182. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 49, Investment Funds Committee. Ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1. Message number 183. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 103, Water Project Repayment. Ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1. Message number 184. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 109, Auto Cycles. Ayes 29, excused 1. Message number 185. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 111, Nurse Practice Act Revisions. Ayes 29, excused 1. Message number 186. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 119, Grand Teton National Park, Transfer of State Lands. Ayes 25, noes 4, excused 1. Message number 187. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 133, Postmortem Despoiling Penalties. Ayes 17, noes 12, excused 1. Message number 188. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 136, Energy Science Stipends and Fellowships. Ayes 29, excused 1. Message number 189. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 144, Legislator Per Diem Local Residents. Ayes 14, Noes, 12. Excused, 1. Conflict, 3. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, general file tomorrow, the first five bills will be House Bill 140, House Joint Resolution 8, House Bill 235, House Bill 253, House Bill 215. Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, January 31st, 2017.
Committee announcements. Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 in H-36 to discuss the following bills: House Bill 199, Right to Repair; House Bill 200, Beef Checkoff Penalty Repeal; and House Bill 205, Game and Fish Animal Damage Management Funds.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet on Wednesday, February 1st, 2017, at 7 a.m. in General Room H-37. We will hear House Bill 254, Public Purpose Investments; House Bill 208, General Attorney, Elected Official; House Bill 216, Sexual Assault, Custody Rights; House Bill 271, Game Bird Farms, Greater Sage Grouse; and then House Bill 233, State or School Employment Contract Compensation Reduction.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. in H-38 to consider two bills: House Bill 197, Marijuana and THC Products Policy Reform Act, and HB 145, Possession of Controlled Substances, Subsequent Offenses.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet tonight at 6 o'clock in East High School Auditorium. We're going to take public comment and work House Bill 236. So at 6 o'clock, we'll come in and have an explanation of legislation. 6:30, we're going to have public comment on the budget cuts. 7:15, we're going to look at or listen to public comment on revenue enhancements. At 8 o'clock, we'll have general public comment. And 8:30, we will be discussing and voting by the committee working the bill. Hope to see you there.
Okay. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7 will meet first tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. to hear House Bill 106, Change in Party Affiliation; House Bill 248, Select Committee on Elections; House Bill 241, Background Checks; House Bill 89, Judges of First Class Cities. We will also meet tomorrow upon noon recess in H-37 to hear House Bill 183, Security for Deposit of Public Funds; House Bill 221, Non-Resident Employer Bonding Requirements; and House Bill 227, Automatic Renewal of Consumer Contracts.
Thank you. Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow upon adjournment to work three bills: House Bill 185, House Bill 202, and House Bill 275. Thank you.
Okay, any other? Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Joint Appropriations Committee will meet on adjournment to continue the round robin markup of the general budget. Tomorrow at 8 a.m., House Appropriations will meet on House Bill 55, 60, 79, 105, and 225, and re-referrals 262 and 94. And then on adjournment tomorrow, we will have re-referral 187, and then the continuation of House Bill 170, Joint Resolution 6, and House Bill 217.
Any other committee announcements? Any other items? I think that clears the desk. You've heard the motion. All those in favor of the Majority Floor Leader's motion, please say aye. opposed, say no. The House is adjourned until tomorrow, Tuesday, January 31st at 9:30 a.m.